Today's study is in the Gospel of John, chapter 21, verse 20. And Sister Gail, would you read three verses?
Then Peter, turning about, seeth the disciple whom Jesus loved following, which also leaned on his breast at supper, and said, Lord, which is he that betrayeth thee? Peter, seeing him, saith to Jesus, Lord, and what shall this man do? Jesus saith unto him, If I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? Follow thou me.
And the next verse was meant to.
Then went this saying abroad among the brethren, that that disciple should not die. Yet Jesus said not unto him, He shall not die, but, If I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee?
Now back to verse 20. Peter, turning about, seeth the disciple whom Jesus loved. And of course that's
John
himself. And he identifies it indirectly by this leaning on Jesus' breast at the memorial supper. Verse 21. Now Peter, seeing him, saith to Jesus, Lord, and what shall this man do? Referring, of course, to John. Now, what any comments on either of these two verses? Yes.
First of all, I appreciate John's observation that Peter turns about. This was a very focused conversation between Jesus and Peter, and now Peter turning around as if he's trying to change the subject. But
yeah, and he wondered maybe he'd be crucified too. You know. Is he going to get crucified the same way I am? Peter would know. I think Peter would know what he's referring to. Mm-hmm. And certainly if he didn't at that moment know, in thinking on this, it would dawn on him, certainly.
Brother Frank.
Yes.
John, Peter might have thought John was giving a little more information, because he had been kind of close, in a sense, to the Lord. And leaning on his breast, that the Lord might have taken him a little bit into more to his confidence.
You mean whether Peter was wondering if Jesus was more partial to John?
Yeah, might have given him a little bit more of his information, being there was that affectionate attitude that existed. I'm only guessing, of course.
I think he was interested, of course, in John's fate. Notice that after Jesus death and resurrection, Peter and John were paired. And not only at Pentecost, but in the curing of a man at the gate, and another. For a while there in Israel, it was Peter and John this, Peter and John that. So that they were, he would be concerned about his partner. I think there was a growing affinity between these two. Peter asked John at the memorial supper to inquire who it was that would betray him. So I see this, that as time went on, Peter became more attached to John than to Andrew, his brother. And even though it says Peter and Andrew and so forth in the earlier part of Jesus' ministry, when he gave them names and things like that, but at near the close, I think they saw in each other this spirit of zeal that they were drawn together. Now you would want to know, well, what about why you'd be more concerned about him than about the other, what would be 10 eventually, the other 9 in this case, because this Judas had lost out here. But Jesus' answer was,
Brother Frank?
Yeah.
Before we get to the answer.
All actually, right.
Do you suppose this is like verbatim what Peter said? In other words, Peter seeing him saith to Jesus, Lord, and what shall this man do? it kind of sounds, it doesn't sound like a close affection, if those were the words, you know. And what shall John do? That sounds a little better. But do you think John left out his own name?
Yeah.
And just said, this man, so that...
Well, I think there are italicized words here. Let's see. Peter, seeing him, saith to Jesus, Lord, what about this man? What about this? What about, I don't read into that a jealousy or anything like that, but the way it's worded makes you think.
A little cold.
Yeah, it's a little more, I don't know how to, yes. I just think it's like, what about him? What about him? More than reading into it the other. But Jesus' reply, I think, was also calculated.
Mm-hmm.
Even he had a reason for this, I think. He must have been instructed by the Father long before about certain things that would be even with regard to the disciples. Because notice the way he said, if I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? Follow thou me. The very fact of phrasing it that way, that brings up a question. There's a couple of things that might be brought out about that. That nature of that reply would be what? Yes, all right.
Just thinking of the article I read where it was stated that John represented the class down here at the end of the age. Those that are tarrying, and this would be included in this thought, if I will, that he tarried.
So. In other words, it was also a prophetic statement that the John class might very well tarry.
Mm-hmm.
And then when John personally tarried, led a very long life, this then would be a good picture. The John class are the feet members or the latter members of the body of Christ in the Gospel Age. Yes.
Well, this is also based on a reprint article, but I like the paraphrasing. Jesus would be saying, really, if it is mine or the Father's purpose that John tarries, that really is no concern or no business of yours. Follow thou me, being a lesson too for all of us that we have to be careful we're following the Lord, regardless of any dealings or trials or anything that come on others. We aren't to compare our lives with another, but with the Lord and the Lord's word, and be sure that we're following the Lord's instruction regardless.
Yes, there's a principle inculcated here by the resurrected Jesus, too. There's also a little reserve here. And speaking to Peter, just like they want to embrace him, the women after his appearance, two of the women. He said, touch me not, I ascend not yet to my God and your God, and so forth, and with Mary too. There both classes he had to reserve, to the women, plural, and to Mary, and this to Peter, we believe.
Yes. For this observation in verse 20, John took a practical whole verse to avoid to call his name.
Yeah. Well, he had to get out of the rut because he said in the other case, that other disciple, this and that other disciple, so now this is another way. He used, which is interesting. Yes.
Okay, just along that line, so a lot of times he would just say the disciple whom Jesus loved, but here he uses not only that term, but also some other defining terms, and I think maybe this is one of the verses that helps us tie down that it is John. It's talking about John when he's using that phrase.
In other words, as a capitulation of the gospel itself, in which these terms are variously introduced, that this pins down what is meant by that, of the disciple. Because starting even when Jesus called them, it said that John the Baptist was speaking to two individuals there. And we know that John was one of them. We can read into it, and ever after, he's consistently trying to put the I in the background, John. In some respects, much like John the Baptist. In some respects, yes.
And he will tarry till I come. I was wondering, Jesus knew that John is going to write a book of Revelation, and by the revelation, he will, by spirit, he lived through the end of the age.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's two thoughts that you get, and I think both of them are valid. One in connection with the book of Revelation, and this other spiritual aspect that the John class would tarry until the Lord's presence, his second presence, second advent. The John class did. So prophetically, it has one application, and then from a natural standpoint, he certainly did tarry, and as they would see the others die and see John live on, this led to this statement. I don't think this immediately was of that nature, because John did not even write this gospel until a fairly late date. And once he did do that, and it was into print, and they got the wind of this private conversation, Peter, John, and Jesus, that was recorded. And then they look at John, that he's now 89, and he's 91, 92, 93, or something like that. They're beginning to wonder, and this would give rise to the fact, well, maybe he'll be here until the Lord's second advent. And of course, there are many other things that Paul had to combat during his ministry early, that the resurrection was past, some said. Some said that there was no resurrection, but there were others in other parts of the Gentile world that felt that the invisible second presence had taken place, that it had they understood it to be invisible, else he would have used Paul, well, I don't see him, you know. So that isn't the argument Paul used. He had to use about the man of sin and so forth. So that resurrection being passed already was another thought that existed. And then there was another one. I was trying to think of the other one. It just slipped my mind. So there's this statement plus that other and one other. And I just can't think of it at the moment. And Paul, when he wrote a letter in Thessalonians, 1 Thessalonians, they thought that he was hinting that Jesus had come back. And he says, don't, as by word of doctrine from my mouth or by my pen or what, don't get the thought that I meant in my first letter that Jesus was here. I'm making it more blunt and pertinent. No, he cannot come until such and such things happen. So there were some who thought he had already come. And the word used in the Greek is not that it's nigh, in the sense that the second advent is near. The Greek word used means present. That he's here, not parousia, but in thought, that he's there. And he says, don't get that thought, that I'm teaching that. So it showed that there was this disposition in the church of the possibility of Christ coming back soon. But when Paul wrote this, he thought, well, maybe he means now that it's all. And he had to quiet them down. And John, when he wrote his gospel, had to say that this rumor is not, it's just he didn't say exactly what some are thinking he said. For instance, Jesus said not unto him, he shall not die, but if I will that he tarry. So he had to straighten that out. So this is something that had already existed. Then you have another one. Oh, there are many. Beginning to come back. I'm a little slower when I'm older. Another one was about the awakening of many that were asleep at the time of the crucifixion. It says that in the Matthew Gospel, which is a true account, in spite of some trying to change it. Even Pastor Russell admitted this, but you have to read that article a couple times to see what he's really saying. They thought that awakening of those who had been asleep was an evidence of that. And then when they saw Jesus in the book of Acts, after the resurrection, said, "Wilt thou at this time restore the kingdom?" So there's this, certainly, this theme of the second advent was very exciting to them, so exciting to them that they overread statements and incidents, providences that happened. They misread them in their zeal for the promised return and so forth of Jesus. So here that this needed to be addressed. This. Can we read the next two verses, please? Verses 24 and 5.
"This is the disciple which testifies of these things and wrote these things, and we know that his testimony is true. And there are also many other things which Jesus did, in which, if they should be written, everyone, I suppose that even the world itself could not contain the books that should be written." Amen.
Any comments on that?
Is that a true interpretation?
I think it was probably appended to some of the very most ancient documents, but I think this is definitely an interpolation by internal evidence. For there are several reasons. One is the way it's written. This is the disciple which testified this part and wrote these things. That would be John, no question, and wrote these things. Now they knew John. But now it says, and we know that his testimony is true. I could even say possibly that is authentic, that part. But now the next is another matter. There are also many other things which Jesus did that which, if they should be written, everyone, I suppose. Right away, that I is out of harmony with his statement of always referring to himself in an indirect manner. All the other occasions, this is the first time, I. So that is an internal evidence that this is not written by John himself. When John wrote this gospel originally, had it compiled, it was finished while he was yet alive. But in the transcription of that original writing, into an incorporation with the other Gospels, because it was incorporated. That took like a century so before even the Gospels are gathered together, let alone Paul and his writing. That's somewhere in there. This other statement is added, and it's an exaggeration. Some try to justify that by saying this is a Hebrew hyperbole or something like that. Well, which is true. There are instances in the Bible, the walls up unto heaven, they were giants, we were like grasshoppers, and things like that. Yes, that's true. But I think the internal evidence, that I, there in that last verse, marks it as not John.
The one I read yesterday, it was not in the Sinaitic manuscript.
Oh, I could have verified that. I didn't look that up. It's not in the, for instance, I don't think in the Diaglot and some other things. You'll find it, no comment mentioned as far as whether it's spurious. But that can easily be ascertained. But I'll have to do that later, yes.
I couldn't find any place where it says that it wasn't included. Every translation that I looked at, it was included, including the Diaglot, Nestle's Marshall's, Revised, some of the ones that we normally check to see if something's serious, and they all had it included. And the only time I could find was in the Diaglot, where it goes into this discussion about it being an Eastern expression, and it brings out the other things about the grasshoppers. And,
Is there any It must be in the Berean,
something,
because
I
have
it. I do too.
Okay, so
I do too.
And then
the back
of
the Berean, it has that listed as being spurious, but those are not all accurate.
Yeah. Well, I could actually ascertain that very, very easily, whether it's there or not, because I have the picture of that page, the actual manuscript, the Sinaitic. But I'm saying that the internal evidence betrays it as being not John writing that. I don't think that I am convinced of. And so that if it's even if it's in the Sinaitic, the Sinaitic, after all, is a copy. It's not the original.
I read it in Pastor Russell's reprint on it, Gallbody statement. That's where I read it, and not from the Sinaitic.
Yes. So that it ends up with the word amen.
Which is characteristic.
So that part.
Yes. So the, can I ask about verse 11, 20 and 11? Is that there is a. The Simon
21:11 or 20?
21:11.
All right.
Simon Peter went up and drew the net to land full of great fishes, 153, and for all there were. So many, yet was not that broken. Is that second thought, can it be possible that could have been more than 153?
No, I don't think that's what it meant. Mm-hmm. It means, the way it's phrased there, it's foreign languages express the same truths in a slightly different manner, in their own peculiar fashion. Peculiar to, say, the Hebrew tongue or the Greek or the German or whatever nationality. I think it's just saying that that this quantity of fish, normally speaking, could not be gathered in or hauled, 153 fish, great fish of this size, without the net breaking, because the net was not designed for that type of a haul of such fullness. And it's just mentioning that. That they were so many. But that's right, there was a question on that thing which we didn't address before. The number 153, I think, is very important, and Sister Gail, I think, brought out the thought that the possibility that this may refer to the last group that might be possibly brought into. To shore, but or to the heavenly shore, let us say, but and that remains to be seen whether that's so or not. I will not contradict.
In the second chronicle, it's interesting. It's not exactly the same, but I saw 153.
In what?
In the second chronicle.
All right, now you read that. That might be very interesting.
And Solomon numbered all the strangers that were in the land of Israel, after the numbering wherewith David his father had numbered them. And they were found 153,300,600. And he set 70,000 of them to be bearers of the burdens, and 80,000 to be hewers in the mountain, and 3,600 overseers to set the people of work.
Yeah, I see. I don't think that's the case. You're taking round numbers, say the 153,000. And you're taking the latter part of this verse in John, but the fact that it said there were 153 means that that's very specific. I cannot see that the next comment of John means that there were more than that. But the number 153 is a mystical number. I think it's a very important number. There's certain things peculiar about it. If you take the number, add numbers, 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5 and so forth, you come to the number 17, and that total is 153. In other words, 1 plus 2 is 3, 3 plus 3 is 6, 6 plus 4 is 10, so forth. Up to 17, it becomes 153. Also, the number 17 is a multiple of the 153. 9 times 17 is 153. The multiple of 17 is also in the Great Pyramid. but in a modified sense. So there, it seems to be that there is something about the number. It is a mystic number, but the most valid comment that I would know now is the one that Sister suggested, but that would have to remain to be seen, because I'm not myself. I can't say one thing or the other. I haven't got enough evidence, you know, to satisfy myself exactly what it means spiritually, but it might very well mean that these are true fish that are being brought in, and refers to individuals or souls that are drawn in.
It does say great ones, though. So, doesn't it? Yes. Would that mean they are, if it were such, it would mean they would have to be particularly unusual?
They were larger than the normal fish. Sometimes you pull in the net with a conglomerate of fish, of which you have all kinds. Sardines, and in size, they vary in size. I think this is saying that each of these 153 were large fish, in that sense.
As opposed to the dragnet that had good and bad, and the dagger weeded out.
That's right.
Everything in here was salvable for whatever purpose.
Yes.
So, Frank, just for clarification, that Second Chronicles, it's 153,600.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just,
well,
we said quite
it's a rounded number that she was thinking of, and maybe the John account was not it included more than 153. Well, anyway, it shows that she was diligently searching for the truth. She's looking for the truth.
Something to do with the temple.
And it takes its heart to look up certain numbers because they are not in the concordance. You don't look up in the concordance 153.
I didn't come up with any answers.
Well, this concludes then the Gospel of John, which I think is personally I felt it was a very profitable study. All the Lord's words profitable, but in a special sense. So we'll conclude then this particular study at this point.